Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Samaya Coleman is the lead organizer for the campaign to free Marissa Alexander and with the African American Black Women's Cultural Alliance. Oh, we are totally, totally pleased to have you with us. And she has arranged for us to speak with Marissa Alexander, a survivor of domestic violence from Jacksonville, Florida, who was prosecuted and threatened with 60 years in prison for defending her life from her abusive husband. She spent 3 years behind bars, and beginning January 2015, she is sentenced to 2 years of house detention while being forced to wear and pay for a surveillance ankle monitor. And I have to say that she is one of my heroes. Marissa Alexander, thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, it's interesting that I woke up this morning and I just to start our conversation hearing three news pieces. One, Budweiser Light Beer has put these slogans on its cans, and they're different slogans. And one of the cans has a slogan that says effectively, the beer that makes sure no doesn't mean no.
Mm.
Now that's pretty heavy. Will they remove it? One can only surmise. Hopefully there will be tremendous pressure to do so. Two, a woman in New York who was the director of a battered woman shelter in the Bronx was kidnapped by a batterer of other women in the shelter, and she was murdered. Three, this is what they're calling Denim Day in New York. And Denim Day comes from a overturning of a rape conviction. It actually happened in Italy. And the basis for that was it was overturned because, quote unquote, the woman was wearing tight jeans. So now in protest against this in New York's Denim Day, where people are encouraged to wear denim to raise up the issue of women who are subject to domestic violence, who are subject to sexual assault, and wind up being victimized by the system. Well, that's what really is on my mind. Samaya, why don't you take us into the nature of the discussion, because you've been doing fundamental work around these issues and starting with the campaign to free Marissa.
Again, thank you for having us on this morning and giving us the opportunity to speak to these horrific issues in ways in which women are criminalized, and specifically Black women who are criminalized for defending themselves and also experiencing domestic and sexual violence at some horrific rates. One of the things that I would like to say beginning is that the mobilization campaign to free Marissa Alexander was specifically about her not being forgotten or lost in a system that sought to criminalize her and never saw her as a victim of domestic violence. When we first heard about her case, we knew that the potential for her to be lost in this system was really huge. And so we sought out to mobilize nationally and internationally to raise awareness about the issue of domestic and sexual violence for all women. But we knew at that time that Marissa was the face of what was happening for many, many women across the country and many, many women in the world.
Marissa, you've gone through and just staggering brutality in your own personal life. You defended yourself. You had to defend yourself, and then you have been further victimized by the system. Tell us how you put all of this in perspective and your thoughts on all of these issues now.
Again, like I said, thank you for, you know, having me. You know, Samaya is my hero. I just love her, so I'm grateful that she was a part of, you know, my campaign and the good work that she does. But for me, you know, when I first, you suffer in silence. You know, I've heard that term before, and I think I just was not educated on the actual what domestic violence really was. I didn't know anybody hadn't experienced it. You hear about it, but you know, you don't hear about it to the extent of, you know, it's kind of one of those taboo topics even still in, you know, 21st century, which is really a shame. But when I experienced it, I didn't even know I was in that type of relationship before, you know, I was really, you know, in depth into it. So that's where education comes from, you know, and can, you know, the work that somebody does, and, you know, your radio station, people talk about it. And for me, once I was, you know, in the system, and it was just so apparent that it didn't make any sense. Like, I mean, how do you, you know, get a permit and do all the things that I've done and still was in the predicament that I was? I just knew it was bigger than me. And so, you know, my whole thing was giving up was not an option ever. Mm. And so that was the attitude that I took forward. And, you know, just remaining in prayer and in the center of, you know, my sports, which is God, to maintain some level of sanity and not be bitter and angry, but to rise above it in order to survive not only the first part of this, you know, the issue, which is the battle, but the long legal battle after that. So that's basically where I stand. And even now, you know, I was, you know, amazed at some of the things that happened after the fact that, you know, put a big spin on things as far as, like, the football players' issues, which has been going on forever. I guess we needed a camera and an elevator to actually see that. But,
yeah,
you know, yeah. I mean, so it's just those type of things has always been out. So, you know, I was kind of surprised to see some of those things myself.
You're really a remarkable woman. Yeah, both of you are my sheroes. This issue is so submerged and put aside. But you see, I guess I do feel bitter and I do feel angry because there's the initial instance of the battering and the abuse, and then the societal and the systemic way that women are told to either endure or further, such as Marissa, are then what? Prosecuted, incarcerated, face 60-year prison sentences, and still at this point, forced to wear, pay for an ankle surveillance bracelet, 2 years of house detention. Samaya, where do we need to go with this kind of thing? How do we raise up the issues? And you dealt with it particularly in the context of women of color being even further subjected to these kinds of systemic abuse.
Well, that's a big question. Where do we go?
Yeah, well, we like to start with global. Yeah.
Right. It's you know, when we look at this situation and we think about black women in particular that are experiencing alarming rates of violence in the home, and then we see violence in our streets and we see violence in our prison systems, and we could just jump in here anywhere and begin to try to find solutions, right? So we think about the fact that Marissa's case, it could have happened. This can happen to anyone, absolutely anyone. And so Marissa's case basically says to us that if you defend yourself, there are all these other things to be concerned about, that you will not be believed. You know, we have to start by believing a woman when she says that she has been abused by her intimate partner, that she will be criminalized, that she, because of mandatory minimum sentences, that she would be seen based on that particular law rather than on the incident that happened to her or a history of abuse. And then the other message is that if you defend yourself, you could spend 20 to 60 years in prison. So therefore, don't defend yourself, but to stay in the violence. The question is always asked, why do women stay in abusive relationships? So this situation sends a message to women that if you defend yourself, you are subject to being criminalized and ensnared by a system that will not see you as a victim of domestic violence, will not protect you, will not support you, will not believe you.
Well, the idea is that, you have the right to, stand your ground any place you have, a lawful right to be. You do not have to retreat, and that's the idea. And so I think the issue then becomes, is just from my perspective, is that I did not essentially kill my abuser. I had so many people, especially from the legal community, attorneys and such, that say, this would have been a different case, had you killed him, because at that point, it's my word against my word. Essentially, what we had was a situation where that did happen. I did stand my ground, and I didn't have to do so in a way that caused fatality. It still had the same outcome, that I protected myself. And so now you have a situation where it's his word or their word against my word. And that just, when you have a situation like that, I think it brings in a different type of complexity, unfortunately. But then you can start to look at the facts, and the facts were, you had someone who, had a permit in their own home, had just had a baby, had never had any issues. And then you have somebody who, that's what they did for, many years. Okay. And in my particular case, you switched your story a couple of times, and it was just messy. And so I guess at that point, because it was an issue where there was, his word against my word, and I guess that kind of, the judges made a decision as far as, okay, well, I didn't think this rule applied to you. And so I guess that's where, that comes in from. Now, they have made changes to it, which is some type of warning shot bill, and that's been passed. I haven't thoroughly read it. I have my thoughts on it. I'm just going to, leave that as it is, but that's essentially the case mine, I guess, that, my abuser lived to not tell the truth. So, we had a situation where we had to, go back and forth.
Marissa and Samaya, what do you think are some of the things that need to happen for education, for public awareness, and possibly legislation and or other cases that we have to rally around to begin to address in a much more concerted way the terrible, terrible realities of women who are victims of sexual violence, women who are victims of domestic violence, and of course we know that huge numbers of women who are incarcerated have been very much, maybe 80% of the women who are incarcerated are victims of some form of domestic violence. Marissa, what do you think has to happen? Samaya, what do you think has to happen?
I would defer to Marissa first. Go ahead, Marissa.
For me, one of the things that, I was in, incarcerated, so I got to see it from a different perspective, and I got to see a lot of women come in, who had been in these situations, that were arrested, called the police themselves, and still was arrested. I mean, they would come there with black eyes. It was unbelievable. And, I got to thinking about, just the question you asked. One of the things is, you shouldn't feel like you can't call for help. And if you do, then it's a possibility that, you could, be in trouble if you call for help. One of the things, and this is just a wish list, and I don't know how feasible this is I think that, I know that they do some type of domestic violence type of education, the police officers and whatnot. I like to see, female officers accompany the male officers as well. You know, I just think that it has a different perspective. Not to say that it would overrule the training, but you should have a different perspective on things. That's just from my point of view, from being actually in the system and seeing some of the things, and just being able to allow people to, you know, come to you, whoever that may, you know, be any type of community, you know, like the work that Samaya does, or, you know, the, you know, police officers, even if you have to do it in a way that, you know, allows for you not to further put yourself in harm, because, and then just the education, because I just didn't know, you know, and then it became a point that, you know, now, I mean, you know, I'm extremely cautious of, you know, any type of, you know, situation where there's a disagreement, because it's just a matter of, you know, it can be your word against mine. But when it comes to domestic violence, I just feel like, you know, you just shouldn't feel like, you know, I can't get help because the possibility, you know, that I'm going to be looked down upon, for one. And then two, that, you know, I'm going to have to deal with this part of the issue, because I'm going to have to deal with, you know, the stigma, or somebody feeling like, you know, in my case, you know, I'm an African-American female, so maybe, you know, I was a bit aggressive. I mean, you know, you shouldn't have to deal with that if you have that type of, you know, situation. That's just my feeling on it.
Samaya?
I say that education is key as well. Most people don't know that 3 women die each day from intimate partner violence, and that Black women are about 3 times more likely to die in their intimate partner relationship. And also, too, they don't know that, for the most part, African-American women are killed by their partner when they are trying to leave the relationship, when they're trying to free themselves. So also, too, training law enforcement, magistrates, judges, that is very important for them to be able to understand the dynamics of domestic violence. It's important for us to have culturally specific services that are relevant to communities of color. It is also important for faith communities and local grassroots communities to be aware and to better define what is domestic and sexual violence, and to just be a part of advocating for victims in a better way rather than blaming them.
I'm sorry. And I want to add to the blame imperative, but I do want to add this part of it. I feel like if you are a friend of someone and you know it, you know, support your friend regardless of what you think of the relationship. Support your friend. And I can tell you that because I had people or so-called friends during that time that knew a little bit about what was going on. And even after the fact, you know, really felt that, you know, I don't understand why she was in it, you know, well, no, it didn't happen like that because she should have, you know, and it already makes it, I mean, you're already dealing with the shame and the embarrassment of it, and then not to have, you know, the support of people you call your friends. I can't say that was the case with my family because they were very supportive for what they did know, but if a person can't talk to their family and you know of it, a friend or worker, co-worker, then support that person. And you can make, you know, you really don't know. You can possibly, you know, help them in more ways than one. Whether you agree with the relationship or what they decide to do, just support them in that because it's already difficult. And you never know. It may be a time where you can actually, you know, help them out of it or, you know, possibly save a life. Mm-hmm. So I would like to say, you know that, support that person.
And Samaya, how do we make sure? We've got to get Marissa out of that ankle bracelet. It is no less offensive that she is not facing 60 years, but is indeed 2 years of house detention, forced to wear a surveillance bracelet. What do we do? How do we continue to support Marissa and to take up the issue of Marissa's case and women who've been subjected to violence from a spouse or partner?
Well, we still invite people to support our Free Marissa Now campaign at freemarissanow.org. We also are on Facebook at Free Marissa Now and Twitter at Free Marissa Now. Marissa has an ankle bracelet that she has to pay for, and we're still raising funds for that. Marissa's making plans to go back to school, and we are making plans to help support her while she's going back to school. That's a part of our restorative justice efforts to help free Marissa. Also, too, we broadened the aspect of our work. We are supporting Nan Hee Jo, who is an Asian woman who is right now facing being deported. She's in a detention center in California. And so we are doing exactly what Marissa has always said. The campaign was not necessarily only about her, but it is also about women across all races, ethnicities, and nationalities. We are supporting all victims of domestic violence, but we really need to have people on board to continue with this next phase of not what is a campaign necessarily, something that has an end to it, but a movement to stand up and say that women have a right to defend themselves and that they should not be criminalized.
And we're going to find out in the weeks to come more about Nan Hee Jo's case, who is a South Korean woman who is now facing deportation. She was defending herself, had to flee, is charged with kidnapping, and to make matters worse, insult to injury, her six-year-old daughter, the full custody has been granted to her batterer. So we've got a lot of stuff to do. Just quickly, in the moment that we have left, Samaya, give us again the coordinates to keep in touch with these issues and to keep in touch with yourself and Marissa and the strategic, critical thing that people of good conscience have to do to address the issue of sexual violence, domestic violence. Where do we touch base with?
You can Facebook us, Twitter with us, go to our website. Everything is Free Marissa Now. Free Marissa Now. And so we just need people to continue to lift up their voices and to collaborate, to educate, to agitate, to do all of that around, raising their voices to ensure that victims have quality services, cultural services, that, we're better defining domestic and sexual violence in our communities, that we understand this is not a joke, this is not a reality TV show. This is about real people's lives, and Marissa's life definitely speaks to that in the ways that we need to support. We need to support one another, to support women and children and families that are experiencing domestic violence.
Marissa Alexander, we hold you dear. We love you. We're going to see you, have you back at this station more frequently. Samaya Coleman, for all of you do, the lead organizer for the campaign to free Marissa Alexander and with the African American Black Women's Cultural Alliance. Dear sisters, thank you so much for sharing with us and, again, the critical work that you do. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Is this girl and where? She to you, Joy and Little. She's my sunshine, Joy and Little. She's our mama, Joy and Little. She's your lover, Joy and the woman who bore the carry of child. Since the day I was born, little old 5 feet tall.
Well, that's a great, great song, Sweet Honey in the Rock, Joan Little, and it is about a woman who defended herself while in prison against rape efforts by her imprisoners, by the guards. And with that extraordinary song from Sweet Honey in the Rock, Joan Little. You can look it up more and hear the entire version. You really should. It's terrific.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.